you know, 2020 has really made me put my big boy pants on and, you know, figuring out different strategies to win in life and succeed in business as But I would say that a good 80% of the deer that I'm shooting these days, even if it's like a two or three deer bedded together, or even if it's five or six deer bedded together, like, if they're facing the other way, like, I'm not calling. I'm going to walk in on them, you know, and just make sure I'm watching their ears. And, you know, if one comes alert attention, I'm trying to use cover to conceal me because I have to stand to shoot anyhow.
If you think you're going slow, you're not going slow enough. And I literally say those words to me, like, every time I go on a stalk. Doesn't always work out, but I do say those to me, those words to myself. And it's like, you know, those are the things, like, when you listen to, that's why I like doing the story thing, is because if you listen to the guys that are getting it done, you know, and are consistently doing well year in, year out, and if you listen to the stories they tell, you pick up things that you wouldn't get if I was doing one of the how-to style. And if you, I don't know, I think it's a cool way to learn.
You know, if you want to be real here, I mean, that's the stuff you have to pay attention to. Understanding how sound carries in the field, what you can and can't do based off of, you know, understanding their behavior and knowing how to manipulate that.
Hey guys, before we get into this next episode, I want to share a couple things with you. First, I am happy to announce the new daysinthewild.com is finally launched. Everything is in one place: my guide services, the podcasts, access to my blogs, etc. So go check it out, daysinthewild.com. If you've been following the show lately, you know that we've partnered with Bushnell and Primos. The awesome thing about that is that if you use promo code STL02, you will save 15% on anything they sell. It doesn't have to be the stuff that I use. I've been using the Bushnell trail cameras for years. I did a couple of reviews over the years, and Bushnell always came out on top. They're excellent. And I know you've heard me talk about Primo's calls and how good they are, but I've also been using their ground blinds, and they're awesome. I don't know if you remember Double Bull blinds, but that's a Primo's product now, or has been for a while. I also tried out a set of their shooting sticks, and for standing shots, or, you know, using for clients when we're predator hunting, or my kids that need it when we're spot and stalk and have to get in close on javelina or anything like that. It's like a really good tool. I love them. They're quick setup and they're steady. Lastly, do yourself a favor and go check out the lineup of shooting bags, glassing pads, and other accessories that Phoenix Shooting Bags puts out. Go to phoenixshootingbags.com. Use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and save 20%. Rifle season is upon us, guys. You'll thank me later, I promise. Go check them out. Hey, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. It helps me keep bringing you guys content for free. It definitely helps out our ratings and reach more people. So thanks again for taking care of that. Appreciate it. Now let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. We're talking with my buddy Marlon Holden. Who is she? Never heard of her? That's Grey Light Hunter, just in case you didn't know.
Oh. Hi, John. How are you?
What's up, bro?
How you doing, brother?
Excellent. As you know, I'm excellent right now.
Man, I got
some really good news.
Yeah, super happy for you. That's a feat with a bow. So
yeah, I'm excited, but I didn't have you on here to talk about my excitement. I want to hear about your season, man. You've been having a hell of a season. You've killed some dandy bucks this year, as most years, but this year I feel like the bucks are all got super awesome character, and they're all big. there's no medium ones in between, you know.
I'm really trying these days. Like, I've always tried, but anybody who hunts around me will tell you that I'll give it a few days, and if I'm not seeing what I want to see in a few days, it's really hard for me to just continue grinding for seeing the same thing. I mean, I'm all about putting one on the ground, so in the past, I would hunt a few days and then just end it. And this year I have passed more good deer than I care to even talk about. Seriously, I've passed a lot of good deer trying to get, you know, a few more inches or, you know, a little bit more age class or just trying to make the collection not just simply blur into, you know, the background. Like,
right.
I'm really paying a focused, concerted amount of energy towards trying to harvest better age class and more character. So, you know, to your point, I also feel like it was a good year. I feel like they've all been great years, but I definitely feel like this year was a good one for sure. It all started out in January, and you know, I had a great hunt in January, and it just kind of kept rolling all the way through. So yeah, I'm pretty excited here to wrap up the year with five really beautiful archery deer, and it was one heck of a season.
Yeah, for sure. Well, obviously, we can't get into the full story on all five of them. Otherwise, we'd be on here for 3 hours, 4 hours. But let's give an overview. It's like a quick version of all of them, and then pick one, your favorite one, to tell the full detailed story from start to finish on it.
Oh, man, that's almost not even fair. you know, I think that it's the hunt that encapsulates everything for me anymore. And I don't know, we've probably touched on it before in the past, but I, you know, getting older and really grinding up these mountains has a way of, it's almost like trodden ground. There's homage, you're paying respect, and you're also knowing, you know, I start thinking these weird thoughts about, you know, the hunters who came before us that hiked up those ridges, and, you know, the gear, the equipment that they would bring, and, you know, how it's changed over the years and how it's changed in my life, and you know, what the hunt means to me. So I think that, like, it, you know, summing all of it up is just really living a fulfilling life and feeling like that life is characterized by these memories that have a tendency to take a foothold in your life. Whereas, let's say we didn't hunt, and let's say it was about watching a game, or and nothing wrong with watching a game, but let's say, you know, we were more of a spectator instead of, you know, exactly a participant. And, you know, if you're a spectator, I think that oftentimes every weekend or every week can go by and it's not really associated with anything that differentiates itself from any other weekend or any other week. And right. You can go to dinner, you know, a nice dinner at, you know, the local great restaurant, and you can do that 50 times, and you won't remember really what was different about last weekend or the weekend before that. And I think that hunting is one of those things for me that allows me to define each year of my life and the things that I did each year that I can, you know, as a participant in something, and not only a participant, but as a lifestyle of something that I'm truly engaged and captivated by, I can garner this much deeper appreciation and connection with everything that surrounds me with the hunt. And so I think that that way of explaining it much better explains the you know, kind of the essence of what I'm trying to I guess explain. It's sometimes difficult to characterize it because it's your life and you want it to be defined by certain moments, right? And I like it when there's more moments that define my life than a big chunk that goes by that's kind of like gray matter, you know, where right. It didn't really matter and you didn't really decide or think or wonder what happened. It just went by. So I think of every year and every hunt and all of the hunts that go by as kind of being defined and characterized by those very momentous occasions. And this year was certainly, you know, no exception. We started it off in the desert, and I was, you know, fortunate enough to arrow a beautiful 6x4 with eye guards. You know, he's almost 29 inches wide, just real long tine, just a beautiful basket rack buck that I arrowed in his bed at 52 yards. And that kind of like set the tone for, you know, being really stoked and excited for the year. And boy, I'll tell you what, I mean, if 2020 hadn't thrown everything, including the kitchen sink, at us, you know, I mean, it's kind of like everything has been, I mean, in business, in finance, in the world and realm of, you know, being an adult and preparing for the future, you know, 2020 has really made me put my big boy pants on and, you know, figuring out different strategies to win in life and succeed in business has been a challenge unto itself. So to, you know, as a precursor to the season after January, it was kind of one of those things where the tone was set right. And it was just, I think that because so many things were going on in business and because I was working probably three times harder than I normally worked, when I went into the field, it was like the great reset for me in the outdoors, characterized by, you know, what the essence of hard work really means. And then I told myself to focus on the things that, you know, were important for me goal-wise in the field. Like, you know, do you want to characterize your year with a bunch of 170s like you always do and just kind of like just go through my year and just arrow the same kind of deer you always do and kind of go home with another rack and, you know, put it in the pile? Or did you want to kind of like characterize it by, you know, taking your time and putting in your effort, you know, the effort and passing on? So I really kind of paid more attention to like trying to pick one out that made me get giddy, and then, you know, turning the switch off to everything else, saying, oh, if you see a good buck, it doesn't matter, like, you're not going to shoot that deer, you're going to shoot a particular animal. And I kind of think that that's really what, you know, set it off, John, if I'm being nice. 100%, I just kind of just wanted to go out into the field and find what struck me as, yeah, it's just like, oh, wow, yeah. You know, I mean, when I found that big, heavy, wide typical, I mean, there was just no other deer that mattered. You know, that was it. And I just got lucky on that deer and, you know, like, no kidding, shot him the same day. I mean, it was just everything just lined up perfect. And I'm pretty sure that that's probably a story that everyone's going to want to hear the most of, because he was like the deer that got the most attention on social media and whatnot. He's over 30 inches wide. I mean, I've, you know, had a couple people put, you know, their rough growth scores on him and stuff like that. He definitely goes into that upper range, but he doesn't hit two. He's got 43 inches of mass. He's got, you know, like a 5-inch and a 5.5-inch eye guard and just this massive frame that like just doesn't stop. You put him in your hands and he just feels so rad. And everybody, you know, I probably got like several hundred messages. Hey, where are you at? You know, what unit are you at? What state are you in? And I'm like, yeah, don't talk about any of that. But, you know, I'll definitely talk about the hunt. But that one was, you know, a scenario where get into position in the basin, you're glassing literally right as the sun was coming up. And I didn't see anything right off the bat. It took me probably about, I'd say 30, 40 minutes to pick him up.
Okay.
It was going pretty slow. And finally, you know, the sun started to hit, you know, all the features in the basin. And it's really when the sun starts to kind of hit everything that, you know, you can really pick up movement really good because everything looks like it's just glowing, you know. And so the subtle movements of him out there, and he had like 5 does with him. And I mean, it was just, you know, incredible to like see the sun like hit his rack. And I'm looking at him from probably, I mean, 1.5 miles away, maybe a little bit more. But, you know, from that far away, you could just see he would kind of like be feeding broadside. And then he'd lift his head up and then, you know, obviously had no idea we were there, but would look out towards our direction. And you could just see him just like, I almost had to, you know, stop and rub my eyes and go, what the heck, is that thing real? Like, just, you know, out there in the desert environments, the antlers are really white, they're not real chocolatey, and
right,
the sun just hit him and lit him up, and the mass and the forks and, you know, his width, I'm just like, oh my gosh. And it was funny because in my head I'm thinking, I can't mess this up, you know, I have to get this right. Like, you know, you get one shot at a deer like this, and if you mess it up, like, he's gonna be gone. And so I watched him for every bit of a couple hours, and then he went down into a cut. He didn't go up over any ridges or anything. He went down into a cut, and it was, you know, getting on mid-morning, I guess. Not late by any means, but, you know, I don't know what, 8:45, 9 o'clock in that neighborhood, something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, we can't see him anymore. So let's, you know, get up a little bit tighter, work the country to where maybe we can see down into the cuts and just slowly kind of close that gap. And got all loaded up and started working that way. And every so often I'd stop and I'd pick him up and he'd be, you know, milling around in the brush. And mm-hmm. he went down into the cut. And, you know, it was at this point, it was probably like 10:30, something like that.
I'm going to stop you right there. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
When there's that much buildup, when you have a lot of time to sit there and think about it, does that affect your, like, for me, when I see something and I just go straight for it, or, you know, if I'm hunting a blind or a tree stand and it comes in, I don't get like buck fever. But when I have a lot of buildup, like if I've snuck in and I'm kind of waiting for something to stand up, then for some reason, like the buildup kind of adds and I get a little bit more excited than I would if I wasn't like just running on autopilot, I guess.
You know, the funny thing is I get excited when I see something through the glass, really excited when I see one that, you know, I want. But stalks are pretty anticlimactic to me when it comes to like actually putting a stalk on a deer and shooting it. I don't get any type of any hesitation or any like just weird feeling at all. It's just instinct. I don't have one bone in my body that gets fired up about antlers at all. Like there's nothing. There's literally nothing until the arrow is released. And then when the arrow is released, then, you know, my adrenaline's coursing like freaking mad, and you know, follow-up shots tend to be pretty crappy.
Gotcha.
But, you know, the initial stock and everything, I'm like literally cool as a cucumber. My whole goal with this particular stock is that I wanted to make sure that the wind was right. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that the wind steadied up before we were in a position where I would shoot, because I didn't want it to switch on me. And the other side of it is I wanted to know exactly where all the does were and how they were bedded and what orientation. So that way when I came up, you know, over the top of them for a shot, that I wouldn't have any issues with eyes. I didn't want to get busted by anything in that basin. I wanted to make sure the entire basin was open for me to go ahead and walk through without busting anything out. And so I paid a lot of attention to everything around me, making sure that, you know, I was almost manicuring the situation, if that makes sense. I was methodically just going through and making sure that I wasn't going to get busted in any way, shape, or form, that mm-hmm. we were in there and it was just us. And, you know, I was doing everything I could to control every part of that stock that I could. So from about, you know, 10 o'clock till early afternoon, I sat there and I just watched. I didn't even do anything. I watched until I found out where every single one of those deer were. And once I had an eye on every deer in the basin in his group, only then did I start my stalk. And the stalk took maybe probably a half hour or so, something. It was pretty quick. I came up over the top of him, found him in his bed, and you know, shot him broadside in his bed.
I love how cavalier you are about that.
Well, I mean,
yeah, just kind of like, you know, whatever.
You know, it's kind of funny because earlier on when I was like trying to stalk deer and hunt, I was super cautious. I was almost overly cautious. I actually, you know, would take off my boots. I would freaking, you know, inch my way in. I would crawl and inch my way in. And I honestly, you know, I haven't taken my boots off in over a decade. Like,
yeah. I stopped doing that a long time ago too.
You know, and I don't wear, you know, any funny feet or any, you know, you just wear your damn boots and feel the ground. And, you know, it's not sound that wrecks you. It's the type of sound that you're making, you know? And so, and I don't even like to like crouch down or crab stalk or crawl. I mean, I will if I have to. And, you know, sometimes you have to, but I would say that a good 80% of the deer that I'm shooting these days, even if it's like a two or three deer bedded together, or even if it's five or six deer bedded together, like if they're facing the other way, like I'm not crawling. I'm going to walk in on them, you know, and just make sure I'm watching their ears. And, you know, if one comes alert attention, I'm trying to use cover to conceal me because I have to stand to shoot anyhow, you know, or shoot from my knees or whatever the case. I haven't even really shot anything from my knees. Most everything's just standing up.
Right.
So nowadays the stalks are a lot quicker and I'm waiting for the opportunity in the right areas. You know what I mean?
Got it.
And sometimes it goes wrong and sometimes it just, you know, doesn't work out. And But I think the more you're paying attention to the situation and the more you pay attention to things like where the other deer are and making sure that you get it right before you start going, the easier it is to actually execute the stalk, right? Like,
right.
And get your shot off. I think that I messed up earlier on a lot. I was super aggressive. I'd go, you know, I'd just go.
That's,
and like, whatever.
That's my problem. I'm super aggressive. Everything is go, go, go with me.
And I'm still go, go, go too. Like, and don't get me wrong. If I see a big buck, I'm not going to wait for the next day to see if I can get a stalk on it. Like that, no. Like every single day and every single position, there is a way to get close. And it's a matter of just making it happen and pushing the envelope. But now I'm much more cerebral in that approach. Now I'm much more methodical about making sure that the pieces are in place in order to close that gap. Now, you know, before when I was younger, I would chase a deer, you know, right at first light. I would find him, see him, and I'm off I go, you know. Right. And now I have no desire in doing that. It's like, no way, man. I'm going to wait till he's all comfy and he's just chewing his cud in his bed. And he's happy as a clam. He's gotten up, fed two or three times, taking a crap. And now he's kaput for the day. And he's just chilling out under whatever he's under. And you know, that's that. I'm going to sneak up on him in that, you know, 2 to 4 hour period that I have in that window while the wind's good, mm-hmm. before he gets up to feed for the evening. And that's when I'm going to stroke him if I can. If he gets up and feeds while I'm on my stalk, then, you know, that changes the game and, you know, off we go. But everything that I can control now, I'm definitely doing that. And this guy was definitely no exception. He did. The first shot was good, but after the shot, the does ran uphill. He ran downhill. I didn't see him, so I started to ease forward a little bit and didn't see him. And I eased forward just a touch more, and then there he was, you know, below me to my left a little bit. He was standing there looking my direction. Mm. He was at like 60 yards. I, you know, literally put another one in him. And that put him on the ground, but he kept lifting his head up. Ugh. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to put another one in him. And I think the third arrow I totally missed. I was like a total wreck at that point. I think I missed. But the fourth arrow connected. And the deer was a dead deer anyhow. It's just whenever they're moving. If they're moving, I'm shooting. I don't care if my quiver is empty. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I am shooting until they are just, you know, there's nothing happening. And it's, you know, especially in that situation, he was standing there like, I put another one in him, that dropped him. He lifted his head up, so that made me, you know, say, okay, I'm going to throw another one in my, and I believe that third arrow I missed, but the fourth one connected. And I don't know, man, it was just a surreal moment. It was a really great day in the field. And we're actually going to be releasing some footage of the whole thing here probably in the next, I don't know, who knows, whenever he's done with it, but we got everything, you know, from that day. Actually, we've got a lot of hunts that we're going to be sharing with you guys here soon. So
awesome.
A lot of really killer stories, kind of short stories, kind of like the one we did in the high country this year. I don't know if you saw that or not, but
I did not see the, no, I saw your trailers, but I never seen the actual video. Send me a link.
Yeah, it was like little, you know, 6 to 10 minute short hunts.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I didn't saw that at the hunts actually itself. No, I got to take a look at that. I saw, like, you know, what you put on Instagram, just a little, you know, 30-second, 1 minute clip, but I never saw an actual deal.
It's on there. It's just IGTV. It's a IG video. But
I gotta go check that out.
So it's just fun. We got a lot of really cool brand things we're working on with some of these hunting brands. That's pretty exciting that we'll be releasing and sharing with everyone soon, and a lot of exciting things. But it's been one heck of a season. You know, the last buck that I just arrowed on that late season hunt, he was another example of just a tough deer. He had over 20 deer with him almost every day, and I was getting in pretty close, but not bow range. You know, I was 97 yards, 102 yards, 118 yards, you know, just...
Sounds like my California hunting.
It's like in the wheelhouse where if they get up and start feeding this way, like, it's a done deal, but every single time, you know, something would happen. They'd pick me off, or they'd, you know, they never really knew that I was there, but they would... But they had, like, this sneaking little hunch, like, something's not quite right over there. We're not digging it, and there was no wind. There wasn't like a breath of wind. So it's one of those things where you couldn't, you know that balsam root?
Uh-huh. Yep.
When it dries up and it just turns into crunchy garbage, it sucks. It's louder than heck. That balsam root was everywhere, and it was just curled up brown rat's nest mess across the, the hills, just covering that lower sage country. And so there was, once you got to a certain point, you just really couldn't do anything. You were kind of like locked down. And I mean, you couldn't even back out. Mm. And so there was just some circumstances where I just couldn't get in tight enough to get the shot. But, finally, and he's a buck that I told myself, I'm either shooting this deer or I'm not shooting a deer at all. And there was a couple of really nice, 28 inch, 175 class, 175, one touching 180, maybe class 4 points that were just in and on that mountain range that taunted me almost every day. Oh, yeah. You wouldn't see him first thing, but you'd see like this beautiful framed 4 point like feeding, and you're like, oh man, look at that.
Right.
I'm like, no, I want the one with the cheaters everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think that as I get older, I get more excited about chasing trashy deer. Don't we all?
Well, yeah, it character is like a super big like draw for me. Like even bucks that are small that got a bunch of crap going on are more exciting than a clean or bigger buck. I don't know.
Yeah,
there's something about them. They're different. There's something different like about them, and that I don't know. Different to me is always a Trump size.
I really, I can't agree with you more. I dig the character on a deer, and I dig character more than score. Like, if there's a beautiful, a beautiful freaking 30 inch typical there, that's gonna go really high in the what the inches category, and then there's another buck that's just like a heavy, big frame, nasty looking non-typical with trash going everywhere, but it's going to be significantly less in the score category. Man, I'm shooting that trashy buck all day long. Like, yeah. I don't even care about the pretty typical. It seems like the pretty typicals get less and less appealing as time goes on.
Yeah. I've been very attracted to character myself.
Yeah, for sure.
So, well, that's awesome, man. Those of you who are listening, if you paid attention to Marlon's story and what he talked about, how on the stalk and stuff, that was gold right there. That's some golden bits, nuggets of information that you should. I'm gonna think about that. I've actually, not to toot your horn, bro, but I've thought about something you said to me. I don't know if it was on our podcast with me or just us talking years ago. It was something to the fact that you said, if you think you're going slow, you're not going slow enough. And I literally say those words to me like every time I go on a stalk. Doesn't always work out, but I do say those words to myself. And it's like, those are the things, like when you listen to, that's why I like doing the story thing, is because if you listen to the guys that are getting it done, and are consistently doing well year in, year out, and if you listen to the stories they tell, you pick up things that you wouldn't get if I was doing one of the how-to style. And if you, I don't know, I think it's a cool way to learn. Like, and you just got to pay attention, You can't just say, oh, okay, cool, it's a big buck and this and that. But it's how it went down, how it transpired, what you decisions you made, things that you did. Those are the things that I think that are the big takeaways, So.
No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think the whole point, look, if you are my friend, and so as a result of you being my friend, I love being a part of what you're doing. But I mean, like, as far as the whole tooting horn thing, like, I don't, as far as, let's talk about Marlon, I really don't care to talk about myself. There's plenty of people that are super comfortable doing that. Me, I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't mind, but it's sometimes it can be a little uncomfortable, but you kind of push through that part. I think that if we can impart, knowledge to people that think that it's really difficult or think that it's impossible, or think that, you know, just whatever that might be on somebody's mind that is trying to figure it out. I mean, that to me is rewarding in and of itself. And that's enough. You know, that is something that I do think is really important. I think that guys getting into it, or guys that maybe, you know, don't have as many kills yet, but are on their journey to becoming, you know, the hunter that they want to be, it's really hard to understand and decipher tempo. It's really hard to, if you don't know, it's hard to understand what tempo to, you know, to bring into a hunt, and, you know, what is too fast or what is too slow. And I've seen a lot of guys, you know, just totally rush in. And that's where I say, you know, if you think you're going slow enough, you're still going too fast. I think that's where that comes in. As I kind of go beyond that and really analyze myself, I've learned that oftentimes, John, it's, you know, a lot more about understanding what noises I can make when, how loud I can be when, and knowing what I can get away with from getting away with it time and time again. Because the deer's senses, they're pretty acute. And as you well know, like, if you're not, you know, really, really cautious, it's kind of like, you know, it's two sheets to the wind. So
it's all about figuring out what's out of place and what's not. It's like the same way when you're glassing, right? You're looking for stuff that's out of place. You know, what shape doesn't fit here? Well, deer are doing that all the time, but they're doing it with all their senses. And
they really are, yeah.
And you know, being able to know what to get away with is, you know, what can,
like, for example, I mean, I you know, if I'm inside of 150 yards, like, let's say I'm 90 to 100 yards away, but I'm on the other side of a ridge where I know that the noise will break over them, right? The noise won't. So the thing is very rarely does sound, like, let's say, you know, footsteps on gravel. Mm-hmm. Very rarely does that, like, go over and around the land. You got to think of it as that sound doesn't go through the land.
Right.
And a lot of people will be, you know, 100 yards away on the other side of a ridge and be stalking at a snail's pace. Well, that's not the time to go slow. That's the time to cover ground and make up country. Like, that's the time to get into position. You know, you'll see me going really fast if I'm on the backside of a ridge and they can't see me. Mm-hmm. And I'm cautious, but I'm not worried about.
Yeah, you don't want to roll, you know, boulders down the hill, but the crunch of a normal footstep is not going to.
And I do believe that, you know, my footstep over the years, I guarantee you my footstep, because the thing is I've been, you know, I've been out in the field with people who are non-hunters, people that just are, you know, just want to come hang out. Right. And you know, or somebody that'll come out to shoot content with me. They'll come to shoot photographs or whatever, you know, and they want to come for the day. And I'm like, yeah, sure, come on out. You know, we'll shoot for, you know, whatever, backpacks, bows, you name it. We'll just shoot content. And watching them walk through the country and how we walk through the country, it's amazing how different it really is.
Oh, God, yeah.
It you know, you don't think about it anymore. You know, you just kind of go about your business and you do your thing. And then you take somebody that doesn't hunt out and you see how they move through the country. You're like, oh, my goodness. Like, come on, man. Are you serious? And they're like, what? And they're like, you're making noise too. And I'm like, I know I'm making noise, but my noise sounds different. And they look at you like you're freaking an alien. You know, like, what are you talking about? Like, your noise is different. I mean, I hear your boot steps, you know. You're like, yes, I know. I hear my boot steps too. But, you know, the way that the rock grinds and the way that my foot presses the rocks gently into the soil is different than when you crush a branch and a branch brushes past my pants. Like, everything is subtly different, and it's those nuances that really, I think, that, you know, if you want to be real here, I mean, that's the stuff you have to pay attention to. Understanding how sound carries in the field, what you can and can't do based off of, you know, understanding their behavior and knowing how to manipulate that, or not even manipulate it, because there's really no manipulating it. That's just as raw as it gets, right? The country will tell you exactly what it's going to tell you, and it'll give the deer everything it needs to survive. But what you can do in order to mitigate that circumstance is all in how you can interpret and understand your own movements in the field. So once you've become a true, you know, student of caring about what it is that you can do and how you move and what sounds you can make versus the sounds you can't make, how many times have we been in, like, you know, within 80 or 60 yards of a buck? There's like a force field that once you get inside of like 80 yards and there's other deer around, it's almost as if everything's okay, because now all of a sudden, you know, they almost think to themselves, oh, well, there's no way anything can get, you know, this close to us without us knowing. So, I mean, I've gotten, you know, I've had to like crush branches right next to me to get past. And they just sit there and, you know, it's just another day in the living room. Like, it's no big deal. But you can't just crunch, crunch, crunch. It's a crack that crunched around and slid to the side. And it was just, it wasn't even paid attention to. So there's almost like this little invisible barrier that obviously you can't go tromping around, but certain noises inside a certain range that you could make at 150 yards, they'd all look up at you like, what's that? That in tight, they won't. And these are all like mule deer rules. It's so funny. Like over the years, you know, of testing these limitations, you kind of start picking up on certain things that you can and can't do. And I think that if anybody's going to pay attention to, you know, aside from like the wind and being in direct line of sight, is studying sound.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's a lot of other factors too. Like if you're hunting where there's cattle, or if you're hunting, you know, like I know elk hunters know this, just, you know, you make a lot of noise in the woods when you're making elk sounds because elk make a shit ton of noise, you know, stuff like that. Like you got to kind of think what fits what's out of place. Again, go back to the same thing I said earlier. And, you know, like say, like you were saying, is basically what's out of place and what's not. What can I get away with that's natural sounding or that's not alarming? And
yeah, that's
takes a lot. You know, I still to this day, you know, I haven't mastered that by any means. I'm aware of it, which is the first step, you know, to getting to that point. But you definitely, and you know, I think what it is you got a lot of at bats. You know, you need a lot of at bats. A lot of stalks to figure that out. Oh yeah, you know, I've been in this situation before, and I've done this, and I've done that, and I've done this, and it worked.
For sure, no, without question. Like,
it's definitely something you can't be like, okay, go outside, go out to the woods, and you got to be at one with, you know, this and that. You can't be as a novice hunter. But you guys that have put a lot of stalks in, start thinking back, like start keeping mental notes of those things that you've done and you haven't done, and what, you know. And most of the guys that are successful have that figured out already. But
yeah, and I also think that, you know, for the most part, it wasn't really until I began doing podcasts that I actually had to sit down and think about what I was doing.
Right.
Before that, it was internal, like, you know, rewired tribal knowledge. I would learn something, but I wouldn't realize necessarily that I learned it. Uh-huh. It would be you know, added to the database of my hunting schema, and I would understand what that would look like and how I would utilize it in the field, but I didn't cognizantly put it into some type of understanding that, you know, was in that notebook. It was just something that I did naturally. So a lot of times, you know, when we go in the field and something is, you know, positively reinforced, it's like Pavlov's dog, right? Like he was, you know, that bell would just signify the salivation. And in so many ways, you know, we'll be rewarded or, you know, reprimanded based off of our own interpretation of how the stalk went or what happened during that chain of events. And, you know, I mean, I know that stick bow hunting, like with a recurve and a long bow, I know that a lot of this applies, but at the same time, you know, it's a whole different set of rules. With a compound, if you want to be as proficient with a compound as, you know, say a really good rifle hunter, like I think a compound in the hands of somebody who, you know, if you desire to put yourself in a position of that being your only choice and your only option, a compound bow is just as effective as any of the best weapons out there, even long range weapons. I mean, if you're really akin and acute to paying attention in a student like fashion, that it is your only option. It is the only thing you're going to dedicate yourself to, and you're a total purist towards it. And I think that, you know, guys that run trad bows, you know, curves and long bows, like, are looking at me and laughing and saying, of course your training wheels give you, you know, the ability to do anything you want, you know. And I give them huge kudos, because those guys that are, you know, putting down big mature mule deer bucks with a freaking longbow, like, that is just,
yeah,
that to me is next level stuff. I mean, and I, you know, I really agreed. Maybe one day I'll get the gumption, the actual guts to start doing that.
It's the guts.
Like, I know what I can do with a compound, with a longbow. I'm kind of like, oh dear. Like, there's been some situations in the high country, I mean, as the years that have gone by, I'm like, oh dude, in the basket, done deal. Like,
oh, yeah.
I could have killed probably 60% of the deer that I've killed in the high country at, you know, less than 20 yards and done great with a longbow or a recurve. And I would say that as the seasons get later and the ground gets noisier and more deer, you know, are in the herds or in that those social groups, that, you know, it would become more and more unlikely for that to happen and occur. And the more you would rely on, you know, ambush type techniques versus stalking, but still very viable ways of getting it done. And I think that the kill rate would go down significantly, which I'm not quite ready for that yet. But
yeah, me neither.
But maybe on the horizon. And you want to talk about a difficult hunt. I think that if the hunts were limited to just curve hunts, I think that there would be like a 90% fallout with bow hunters. That would be just like, that would be really rough.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
And the guys that are doing it, man, like, I tip my camo hat every single one of them. You know, it's just it's a next level feat.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've talked myself into doing it a few times. Well, because I used to hunt with one back in the 80s, but you know, in recent years, I've talked myself. But
To hunt with one back in the 80s?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, I used to.
Dude,
hunt
are you
back in the
80s. How old are you?
I'm 45.
You're not much older than me. How in the 80s?
Bro, I started hunting way before you.
Oh my good lord! That like is
I shot my first deer with my dad at 5 years old.
Might as well be the 1920s. Jesus.
Yeah. So
I'm like, 42 now. So you're that 19, back in the 80s.
Yeah, like 87, 88. I was like 13, 14 years old when I started hunting with a recurve.
That's unbelievable. That's cool, man. Gosh, you have
but
like
I never killed anything. I killed my first buck. I killed a doe years and years ago, but my first buck I killed was 4 years ago with my recurve, and that was out of a tree stand. Like I was about to say, it's like I could do it, but I know it needs to be a very controlled environment where I know I'm setting myself up for an under 30 yard shot, you know. And I've killed a couple of javelina, you know, spot and stalk, but that's javelina, you know. And I killed a hog in Texas with one, but never have I said I'm going to go stalk mule deer or coos deer with one. Not going to happen. Not going to happen in anytime soon. Not until I kill a, maybe a couple 2-inch buck, 200-inch bucks or something. Maybe I'll be like, all right, now it's time for a new challenge. For right now, I'm good. But
yeah, that's a pretty radical next level pursuit. And maybe, you know, maybe one day. For sure.
Yeah,
I've seen some.
I could see you doing it. I could see you doing it after a few more years, especially if you have a few more years like the yeah this year. I could see you doing it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that it might not be till I'm like in my 50s.
Yeah.
But I think I definitely will.
That's not too far from me now. So yeah. But
oh gosh, yeah. Let's not even go there.
Knocking on the door. Well, anyway, man, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing that story with us and giving those tidbits. I'll definitely, I personally want to give you a call and we'll sit down and I want to hear about the other ones and maybe we'll do another podcast and catch one of the other stories. But you're having a stellar year. Are you coming out to Arizona?
Possibly. I got a few things that I'm working on. in, well, there's a glimmer that, you know, old Mexico could happen. And then I have a couple other states I'm looking at too.
Nice.
But yeah, there's definitely the distinct possibility that I'm going to be chasing out there too. So we'll just have to stay tuned and see. You know how I'm with states. I don't talk about it anyhow.
Yeah. Yes, I know. That's good. That's good that you keep it on the reps. But well, you get out, hit me up. We'll hang out for sure.
Oh, for sure, man. I always, you know, really appreciate being on with you and having just good, humble, honest, candid conversations. Is I think just it's organic and it's raw and it's real, and I think that you know, out of anything, I appreciate that because I don't have to like put on a show or anything, which is just welcome. And I appreciate everything you do for hunting, and I appreciate everything that you do for all of us out there that are looking to learn and understand little pieces of information that maybe, you know, help us connect the dots. And I think it's all great, man.
I appreciate that. Thanks for the kind words. And I'll let you know about that other thing as soon as I figure that out here in the next couple hours.
Cool, man. Sounds awesome. I can't wait.
All right, brother. Thank you.
You bet.
All right, bye.